Before I go on any further, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners on this land that we are broadcasting from. I also would like to pay my respects to our elders and also our elders of more recent arrival. Thank you for tuning in to Let's Talk this morning. You're about to listen to the second half of my interview with Gimbangia woman Kalisha Morris. Yesterday we yarned about the importance of language revival and also the role that that plays in reawakening, I guess, culture within communities. We yarn about young people, and also in this second half of the interview we yarn about NAIDOC Week as well and the importance of that. Kalisha Morris is a young First Nations woman from around the Grafton area, the Gimbangia Nation. She grew up in Sydney, and while in Sydney, to make herself more connected to back home, she bought some books on language. On her country, they have a language revival centre where they teach our language, not just to Aboriginal or Gimbangia people, but also to non-Aboriginal people as well. So she bought some books, and she, you know, in the first half of the interview, you would have heard her how she spoke about the importance of having those books and how they enriched her life. And she lived in Sydney for quite some time, and now she's back home working with the young fellas and also, you know, reviving more of her language. I guess in the global sort of Indigenous arena, you know, in terms of, I guess, relations, you know, between Māori and white fellas. Yeah, you see this whole generational thing as well. There's more, obviously that's, you know, to do with treaties and stuff that they've had, you know, learning language. You know, and you see these videos of, like, my nephew, I think he'd be about five maybe or six or maybe a bit older now. His mother is Pākehā. Is white New Zealand. He learnt the haka and like learns the language and as well. Over there, racism exists everywhere, but it sort of seems like it's have it right in a certain context of, and obviously it comes down to them having one language as well. Because like you watch videos and you'll see like, you know, white fellas sort of doing the haka as well and speaking the language, and there's lots of places over there with traditional names and stuff as well.
Yeah, I mean, I find it super interesting, and I've actually been to like cultural gatherings and corroborees and stuff like that, where you've got here in Australia, where you've got non-Indigenous people participating, and even like non-Indigenous men who have gone through various ceremonies. And you hear about, you know, some of the early colonial people who had come over and, you know, ran away from the colony and were actually adopted in ways by the Aboriginal people, and went through ceremony and things like that too, and learnt language, and that's so common in our history. So it's really interesting in thinking about how like culture and is, I suppose it isn't something that can be confined just to whatever race you are. You can come in and participate in various ways. And it wouldn't be that, you know, a white person could come in and say that they're black, but it would be that, you know, there are ways in which you can participate and engage in our cultural activities and our ways of being and being invited into community with that, you know, permission and stuff like that. That is totally full of, you know, like richness. And I also think that, like, I think a lot of bad things have happened, a lot of horrible things have happened, and a lot of their legacies continue to live on in terms of racial injustice and things like that too. And as much as we need to be able to continually like fight for fairness and justice and things like that as well, I think it's also always important to keep on centering country and understanding that sometimes it's not even just about what, you know, black versus white. It's actually about country and how we can work in ways to ensure that no matter what happens, country is taken care of. And so I think that's an important way to keep like reframing the conversation. And I don't mean by like abandoning things that should be pursued in terms of what's right and what's wrong. I just feel like a lot of the time when you see black fellows inviting white people into community, it's about spirit and it's about country, you know, and them being a part of that as opposed to inviting them in to be a part of, like, to be a black fella or something like that, you know? I think it's interesting in thinking about how we build relationships with white fellows today and in terms of how we think about where their place is, because a lot of the time we have to admit, you know, that I think white fellas aren't going anywhere.
Oh, what, really?
No, Gavin. No, surprise, no. But, you know, like, they're not exactly going, they're not going to pack up and go in many ways. I mean, in community levels, that could be possible. If that's, you know, with, and that has been possible with permit systems and things like that, that keep certain people out. But I think, you know, like, the questions on my mind now, particularly when working with our young people, our babies and children, is to think about, okay, well, we know that there are these fundamental cultural differences that exist from the West and here, but, and then there's these identity issues, these major, major identity issues that a lot of non-Indigenous people have. And so in what ways can we understand that, what are we centering here in terms of our work? Are we taking care of country? Are we ensuring that we're doing work to like that work that addresses the actual problems that are involved, as opposed to the symptoms of what happens from issues of race, race, racism, and things like that too. It doesn't mean I'm not saying that you can't do everything, but a lot of the time, it is a really good question to ask: is how can non-Indigenous people come into community, and how can we work with them to make sure that they, that country is going to be well, and that they have some type of place here in taking and ensuring that they're adhering to our ways of doing things and natural law and cultural law and things like that. Like, those are really good discussions to be having instead of always just saying, well, what can we do to work together and meet each other on an equitable basis? That's an important discussion, but we need to be saying, well, how can white followers actually come into our community and follow our law and the way that things are supposed to be done? How can we make them part of that community in a way that's going to be respectful of everything and us as well? Because it's the question that we have when it comes to language as well. It's like, well, we're inviting white people to come in and learn language, but is it going to make a difference if they're actually just going on and carrying on the same way that they have been as, like, colonizers, you know? So, yeah, it's a good, it's really, like, I think a lot of Aboriginal people, and particularly us younger ones, really need to be asking those types of questions about what happens around the world and what works for other people, and in how do we come together in a way that's not going to, that's not going to keep oppressing us, and that's not going to uphold, you know, the power structure, the insane, unfair power structures that exist. Yeah, I'm probably talking a whole...
No, that's good. It makes my job easier. I ask less questions. You know, the theme of NAIDOC this year is Because of Her We Can. Any, you know, inspiring or, you know, and any deadly words out there for the special women within your life?
I just think that I take my strength from being a Gumbengi woman, because I know that there have been so many strong women before me, and so it's like, it's important to understand the histories and the sacrifice that our mothers, our matriarchs have made and that they continue to make. And I think if we do so, we all become better people because we understand ourselves as a product or as people from them. And you know, like, there's a lot of strength to be found in that, and I feel like this theme is Because of Her We Can is amazing. And if we could only, you know, ensure that we work to implement that in that appreciation and honouring in every day of the year, that's really important as well, and clearly still very relevant from thinking about the actual reality of, you know, how we, Australian society and Aboriginal communities have to, you know, are dealing with issues of violence against women, particularly, like, Australian society, and how that actual reality at the moment is abysmal and very, very dangerous. But I guess, like, I just wanted to say that I take a lot of, that's where a lot of people ask me what makes me strong, or, like, you know, that those types of questions who inspires me, and my answers have always been Aboriginal women, and always been my grandmothers and my mom and my sisters, and a lot of the time too, like I've been in a lot of involved in a lot of protests and stuff in Sydney, Bo, and that's how I think we met, in those types of circles, because we were all kind of organising. But I've seen, you know, like even on those front lines, still to this very day, Aboriginal women are there and they put their bodies on the line every time. And like you just see it within every movement, the quiet and the formidable and like indestructible strength within any movement is because the women are there holding that post.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, that's kind of what I'm really, really happy that this theme is because of her weekend this year. And I'm actually going to be writing an article for Indigenous X on the theme. So that'll come out during NAIDOC week as well.
Oh, definitely. Maybe we'll try and get you back on as well to have a bit more of a yarn about the article as well.
Yeah, no worries. That sounds good.
And yeah, like one of the, like just on that there, like, yeah, like how you're saying like we first met was sort of in that activist sort of circle and realm, and like the women that have sort of led and continued to lead within those spaces. Like one of the best actions that I've seen, and maybe of the last, you know, maybe of our generation as well, was the Dundale action down in Naarm in Melbourne, where four black women locked themselves in a makeshift prison and just shut down Melbourne for like hours on end. You know, just like
I think sister girl Gabby Briggs was in that, one of the...
Yeah, yeah, the there's Gabby, cells. Meg, sister girl, another sister girl that's a Doolin.
Lucy
Doolin, yeah, and yeah, I forgot other sister girls' names. And also, like every year when any march in Melbourne to do with mob, it's Celeste, Tarnine, and also Mariki organising these massive like shutdowns of Melbourne.
Yeah, it's so impressive. Like it's impressive, but again, it doesn't surprise me. And I don't know that like the amount of times that I have seen Aboriginal women move their bodies in between the police and protesters and just right, like literally on the front line.
Like there's that image,
you know?
There's that image of like when there was the uprising in Kalgoorlie. On one side it was mob and then the other side it was coppers. And in the middle it was this young sister girl sort of saying, hey, no, like.
Yeah, it's a constant. And I think it's big, like you referred earlier to the past and how a lot of like non-Indigenous people went to the men for knowledge, to learn about what the place was called and to learn about culture when there was a massive shift by non-Indigenous people to try to capture and showcase our cultural ways before we were supposedly supposed to have to be doomed and die out. You know, there was this massive move to document Aboriginal culture and knowledge, and a lot of the time it was very much done working with Aboriginal men. And so just understanding how colonization is gendered as well is really important. And the role that women played in keeping and holding on to knowledge and transferring that over skill, and just like it's something that I deal with as someone who, a young person who's interested in, very much interested in learning about historical narratives and trying to learn more about lots of types of things. Like at the moment I'm doing a lot of research into various threatened and endangered species and plants on country. And so I'm going through a lot of archived interviews with my elders that was done between the Department of Office of Environment and Heritage and my elders. And so when I'm coming, reading interviews with the aunties, I actually treat that a little differently than what I would when I'm reading interviews with the uncles, because I understand that there were different dynamics at play within those encounters. And yeah, I think it's just really important to really, like, in terms of appreciating Aboriginal women for this NAIDOC week and from here on out, it's not just about thinking of them as, you know, even as mums and nens and that too. It's actually thinking about them as people who are teachers and healers, and appreciating them for all of the different, and activists and things like that, and appreciating them for all of that. And also, I think in practical ways, I was thinking about how, you know, a lot of sometimes MADOC events and like reconciliation events and all that become very tokenistic. And I'm thinking, you know, in terms of how people are actually asking, well, how can we support women, Aboriginal women for NAIDOC week and things like that. I'm like, well, actually think about the reality of the issues that we face and do a fundraiser and donate it to the local refuge, or donate it to the local the support services that exist for Aboriginal women, which are like severely under-resourced as well.
Mm.
So there are lots of different practical ways that we can honour women leading up to NAIDOC week and then after as well. And I think people should just put some really good, do some reflection and ask Aboriginal women what they want and think about how they can like truly help us in moving forward.
We're just going to head to a song break. But before that there, if you're just tuning in to Let's Talk, my guest on the program this morning is Kalisha Morris, proud Gimbangia and Torres Strait Islander sister, living back home on country, Grafton. We've been yarning about the importance of language and how, you know, language shapes us as Indigenous peoples.
I have no pretenses. All I am is what you see. I'm curbing my defences to respect my mind and my body. And in the face of troubles, I stand and greet all of its faults, knowing that its lessons guide me in their course. And I will soar, I will soar, I will soar, I will soar. I love with a true heart,
I love with a true heart,
all of which I offer you. Openly I cherish,
openly,
and devote unto you. And I will
soar,
I will
soar,
I will
like that guy.
Up,
what's his name?
Up,
Superman or Wonder Woman?
So
I heard she lost her bosom.
Whenever you wake up, wake up
so
high.
So
high.
If you don't, good stuff will pass you by.
I will sing wholehearted.
I love with the true heart.
Strength I've got inside of me.
All of which I
thousand times more humbled,
openly,
than I ever thought I'd be. And I will
soar,
I will
soar,
I will soar, I will soar.
I will soar.
darling, 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 I will soar. I will soar.
So
with you, babe. Darling, 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 I will soar.
Whenever.
Darling, 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 I will soar.
When am I supposed to come in?
This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
And you're back on 98.9 FM. You are listening to Let's Talk. I'm your host, Bo Spearham, and my guest on the program this morning is our deadly Gambangia Jinda. All over the world, you know, there's this massive culture that sort of doesn't really take in context how women feel or how they should be treated seriously. And yeah, we see that all the time as well, but it doesn't necessarily get the airplay, the radio play, or anything talking about. Yeah, like you just mentioned, because these really good services that are on the ground that just get it doesn't get enough funding, and they sort of fall out of place, and then we sort of see this continuing to play out, but like not much care for our women in general as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's such a it's still that, you know, misogyny, and it's very much permeates society still in how we look at our women, and is internalized in lots of ways by our own mob.
Mm.
And so part of our work and my work is trying to ensure that you're like picking out those germs within, you know, the minds of people who believe that, you know, Aboriginal women and pain shouldn't be taken seriously as well, and appreciate that.
And also,
we're so much more than that, you know.
And also, you know, I guess coming to the conclusion that, you know, violence against women isn't just colonial as well. You know, like,
that's right.
These things, you know, happened. Male violence has always been a part of, you know, human society. And, you know, like, all of our mobs have that story of, you know, like, how we, like, men would steal women. Like, we have that story back home. And even when I was younger as well, like, we used to sort of, like, boast about, oh, you know, like, we used to, you know, steal women, not necessarily understanding, like, just how, like, effed up that even just sounds, like, you know, boasting and stuff. Like, yeah, like, we used to war with a lot of the Bundjalung mob, and like, that would sort of be, you know, like, where a lot of the fighting would come out as well.
Wow. Mm. Yeah, wow. That's crazy. I didn't know that. I went as far north as that. Yeah, yeah, no, it's insane, like, some of the things that you just don't pick up on that you've internalized. And I think also one of the important things is that, like, when we're doing revival work with young people too, like, I like young people to stop for a minute and appreciate the fact that we have access to, like, these amazing old, you know, philosophies and knowledge banks and things like that too, but then to also understand that there are going to be some elements there and ways and structures that might not be the best, you know, fit for us in moving forward. And we have the beautiful, like, agency and capacity to be able to utilize the wisdom of the past, but then also to utilize the wisdom of the present and to build from that, and understand, like, that Aboriginal culture isn't frozen. It's adaptive, and it's always growing and changing, and being able to ensure that, like, the fundamental stepping stones are there and foundations are there with in terms of how we connect with each other and with country and things like that, but that we totally have the capacity to be creative and imaginative and to, like, build the type of community that we want to build as Gumbangi, or, you know, from any other nation or clan group and things like that too. So I think that there's so much power in that as well, and being able to build. And I think a lot of young people can either get caught up too much in a assimilative mindset, or they can, when they're confronted with how hard the truth is, they can become very frustrated, and they don't want anything to do with building anymore. They just, you know, so there's, like, somewhere, and we've got to be able to talk to our young people about being able to continually build throughout this whole process. Otherwise, you're going to let, like, what happens in the past and in how racist we're going to let that still destruct you in many ways. So, yeah, it's such a, like, that's a really deep conversation to have and to go into. And it's funny because you're, like, trying to wrap up the show. But,
No, that's all good. Like, I can make this into two shows because, like, it's really, really good answers.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, so good. Like, I was thinking that before. I was like, I was thinking that, like, after whenever an hour, I was like, oh, no, we'll just keep going and I'll just break up
really?
Into
you. Holy crap.
No, that's all good, sis, because, like, what I wanted to ask as well.
But I think you were right before about, and, like, I think it was very important what you said before about understanding that violence has manifested in different ways and throughout colonial and pre-colonial Australia.
I guess because,
like, a lot of people are, like, are scared to talk about that because you struggle so much just to be taken seriously on what is so obvious now.
Yeah, definitely. And what you were saying before about younger generations sort of having that fear, and, like, 230 years may seem like a long, long time right now, because we're, you know, stuck in the middle of it. But in the context of, and in the lifespan of our people, you know, 60, like, if you want to put a, I don't really like to put a time on, I like to say before the, you know, first sunrise, you know, like the existence of our people, you know, 230 years is really, really not that, you know, significant, like, is really small in terms of the existence of our people, you know. And then you look at, if you're looking in a, I guess, a 60,000 years sort of framework, like the things that we did live through as well within those times before colonialism, you know, like, it's such a small amount of time where we've just been sort of, you know, where our world's been tipped upside down. And, you know, like, we did run this country, you know, there's like a few old followers I don't know that always say this thing, like, we did run this country once and we will run it again, you know. And the way we ran it was autonomous. Aunty Mary Graham, she talks about it, how, you know, we ran this country, you know, 500 or 400 nations, you know, autonomously. You know, we had our own languages and our own law and ceremony that sort of, to an extent, was confined to our own mobs, but then was all so interconnected and woven. So I do believe that one day we will, and it's obviously in the work and the processes that, you know, like, that our people are doing, whether it's heard or unheard as well, like language revival and reclaiming country and the narratives and that there.
I totally am on the same page as you, and I think this is actually an area that I'm very interested in going into do postgrad studies a little later on.
What are you studying?
Pardon?
What is it that you're going to...
Well, I'm thinking, because at the moment, like, I'm very much of the same belief that drives me in many ways in terms of, like, there being an Aboriginal futures or Aboriginal futurism, Indigenous futurism. I'm really interested in
back
that.
Back to the Aboriginal future now.
Yeah, back to the Aboriginal future. That's totally going to be a thing, you know. I'm feeling that. It's like, yeah, that's a hashtag.
Yeah, I was actually writing that right now in my book.
Oh, my gosh, that's so good. But, yeah, like, there's, you know, you're right. We have several tens of thousands of years of having governed this country, and a few hundred years is not a long amount of time at all. It's a really a speck against the backdrop of who we have been for so long. And our bodies remember that too. I totally believe that, like, you know, we still carry so much from the old or from before invasion. We carry a lot of that within our bodies today, and, you know, a lot of connection to the past. And I'm really interested in, because, you know, like, I've got some experience having worked in the fields of, like, social and environmental justice, and I've studied environmental justice around the world, and looking at all these different case studies of how environmental racism works and how, like, that is a tool of possession, is a tool of colonialism and things like that. And it's about to, like, in the terms of the climate change field and climate justice, A lot of Indigenous people are on the front lines of losing their homelands on in that space, but also a lot of they're also looking. I think people who are critical thinkers understand that Indigenous peoples are the best custodians and governors of biodiversity around the planet, and so a lot of you see a lot of green groups and a lot of green movements and scientists and things like that going to Indigenous people to try to understand country better, to try to understand and put together solutions as well. Like you've got carbon credits and you've got working with Aboriginal people around the world to burn country, particularly here in Australia. We have this amazing governing tool, natural resource management tool that we've been using for thousands and thousands of years that actually helps to assist environmentalists in the work that they do in preventing huge bushfires. And so there's a lot of, like, you know, part of the problem, what the issue has been is that a lot of non-Indigenous Australia has always looked at Aboriginal people as a problem, which is, of course, indicative of them rather than us. But at the same time, like, we very much are not just, we're very much part of the solution of things. And so, again, like, we do have such an important and vital role to the future. And I'm trying to talk to young people and make them understand that all the time, that throughout colonization, a lot of non-Indigenous people have lost themselves and are spiritually not, they're placeless, and they've lost their connection to each other and country. So it's about us, and we remember what it was, what it is to be connected to the past and present and the future, and that's something that's really special and rare. And I think that's what we have to offer to people who are ready to come and learn. And that's what we should be ensuring that our young people, when we're talking to them about their purpose, we should be ensuring that we are instilling that in them, and that they actually, the work that they have to do and the worldview that they have as Indigenous people is so important to the future, the now and the future.
Definitely. And they don't have to be like you or like anybody else as well, or like me or like Kathy Freeman, you know, or, you know, like anybody else. They just have to be themselves and just realize exactly how deadly they are. And like one thing I like to say to like younger fellas as well, you know, when we think of the old fellas, I guess in, you know, the 80s, the 60s and the 70s, they were just black fellas that was just like me and you that saw something that they thought that needed to be changed. And they engaged in a way that sort of brought that change about. And I think that's the thing, like, telling our young fellas that you're not really different from them old fellas. The only thing that's different is the age gap between who we are. But the experiences that we have in life are the exact same. And, like, we do have the ability to bring change about our people.
Yeah, for sure. It's really important. So certainly a really important discussion to have with young people, and like the change that we need, that needs to be, you know, owned and communicated from, like, you know, thousands of different voices in different ways. And it's not a movement as such if it's just coming from, you know, one person.
Definitely.
Or of a certain way of thinking about it and talking about it. So I feel like, you know, every voice that comes on and it starts to say, yes, like, we need to build the future. We need to be front and center here building the future. It needs to be, you know, every voice adds a new element and richness to it and an importance to the movement as well. So I firmly believe in and am passionate about ensuring that, like, our young people have purpose. And that their cultural legacies, you know, and knowledge banks are, like, amazing sources of strength. And that they understand that the way that we are, our connection to country and to community is also an amazing strength that we can draw upon. And it's really ironic because our young people have such deep roots to the past and to country now, on our own country, but we are so lost in lots of ways because of, you know, with the high suicide rates and issues, and just trying to, like, navigate this type of world and being caught up in that current and you know, just being feeling like they're unable to come back down to the ground and to understand and remember who they are and who they should be.
Mm.
So it's very, you know, like it's not an easy thing, but it's, I think in terms of always centering country and our young people, there's such a an important connection that needs to be made again between the two, and I think definitely we'll be much stronger for it.
We're just going to head to a song break, but before that there, if you're just tuning in to Let's Talk, my guest on the program this morning is Kalisha Morris, proud Gimbangia and Torres Strait Islander sister, living back home on country, Grafton, and we've been yarning about the importance of language.
This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
And you're back on 98.9 FM. You are listening to Let's Talk. I'm your host, Bo Spearham, and my guest on the program this morning is our deadly Gimbangia Jinder, Kalisha Morris. Yeah, I guess to a certain generation, learning Aboriginal language or even speaking that was sort of, you know, the worstest thing that our people could do. Yeah, and then our own mob started, you know, internalizing that thing. It would encourage us. It would encourage other generations to sort of speak English and not that. And yeah, it sort of comes back to that, you know, knowing that that it is a thing that we can do and still live with.
Yeah, definitely. So important. And the thing is, it's like so exciting because, and like, it's, I started to think about this because you think about like the challenges of like various minority groups. Also like the black diaspora in Australia and, you know, around the world as well. And there's issues with particularly in like the US and here in Australia, there's issues with belonging and home and there's such a, like, did you watch, you know, the Black Panther movie?
Mm-hmm.
How amazing was that? That just blew my mind because there were so many like important themes and challenges that were explored within that movie. And one of them was like home and belonging and colonialism and what that does and fighting back. And there were so many different things to talk about. But in terms of home in connection to country, like being a strength or something that's missing from someone, like for so many Aboriginal people on my country, young people here and around Australia, we have access to, we're right here, like we're home already in so many ways. And that's not everyone, of course, because there have been so many of our people who have been dispossessed and displaced. And so I acknowledge that as well. But for those who have been able to stay on country and come back to country and things like that, like it's such something that I feel like a lot of our people take for granted, that they have, like, it's an automatic, we have that. A lot of people around the world want a home, they want connection, they want to go back and know their history and their people and things like that too. And so many of us younger ones who have access to that information and to country don't appreciate that. So, you know, and of course we have other struggles and challenges and stuff too, but that's just something that I feel like a lot of young people don't understand as a strength, when so many other people around the world would want nothing but that. You know, so yeah, there's a lot of work to do with our young people, but there's also, we have like this amazing base and resource base, and like colonialism wasn't that long ago, so we still have, a lot of our mobs still have access to certain things and knowledges that haven't been completely dismantled or, you know, devastated. So just about understanding that, like, yeah, we're really lucky in that way. And we very, like, that's how why I feel as strong as I do most of the time, because there's like just this endless line of mothers for tens of thousands of years who have worked and hard to take care of their families and country. And so I can't, and I have, it's an unbroken line, you know, like there's just something that Aboriginal people in Australia have, unbroken lines to the oldest living civilizations on the planet. So that's such a strength, and I hope that our young people will be able to see that we have that behind us, but then also that we're like incredibly vital and relevant to the future as well. No, it's my pleasure, especially getting to talk with you, and, you know, appreciate we, you know, have come from similar places as young people. I think we need to be able to explore these types of things together.
At some point we do have to cut this interview. I do want to say a big thanks, sis, for coming on and having a yarn with us. And that was the second half of my interview with our deadly Kumbangia Jinda, sister that means in Kumbangia. We yarned about many different things, language, NAIDOC Week, young people also, and racism. It was a great yarn. And also you can catch the repeat of the podcast on our website at 989fm.com.au.